John chapter 5, and we are reading verses 1 to 15. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for a feast of the Jews. Now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, which is surrounded by five coloured colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralysed. One who was there had been invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jews said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat." But he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" So they asked him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?" The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well.
Good morning, 10 o'clock. Great to see you all this morning. My name is Keith. If I haven't met you before, welcome to church. It's great to be here with you this morning. I have three boys, and so they love a good competition. Anything really, it doesn't matter. It can be something, a formal game like soccer or something in the backyard, but it can be kicking a bottle around the house. It can be anything on TV. In fact, at the moment in TV, they're all into MasterChef and The Voice. All right, anything with winners and losers is good. Now, I don't know if you've watched these shows at all. I watch them reluctantly just to support their interests as a good father should. And never ceases to amaze me on these shows the level of the outpouring of emotion when somebody gets knocked out. Have you noticed this? I mean, of course, the cameras are there to capture everything and kind of hype everything up with the dramatic music that's behind anything that's showed. But still, these people are genuinely weeping, genuinely falling apart, even though there is a camera there in front of them. And it strikes me that it's because to them, it's more than just a competition. It's more than just a show. For many of them, they say, "This was my life. This was my dream. I was going to be the next Nigella or the next Heston or the next whoever it is who sings these days." They still have people who sing. That's the thing. They were going to be the next one. All their hopes were attached to this show. And so the emotion is about a hope being crushed. Now, that's fair enough for those people on TV, I guess. But, you know, it strikes me that each one of us has hope in something. Whether we've stopped to think about it and reflect on it or not, we all hope in something. And you can tell what it is that you hope in life by finishing this sentence. "If I could just have, then my life would be complete. If I could just have blank, my life would be complete." Maybe for the deploys, it's sleep at the moment for young parents. But if you finish that sentence, whatever you put in the blank, that is what you put your hope in. Now, for some people, maybe you fill in that blank with money or more stuff. "If only I had more money, then, you know, life would be fine. Life would be complete. I could buffer myself against any of the storms that come up. I could choose any experience that I wanted to have in life. That would be great. I would be really living." And I know lots of Australians think like this because, you know, as a nation, we are hooked on gambling. We're hooked on the idea if we could just get the windfall, life would be better. The stats from 5 years ago, that's before the ramp up of apps and the online advertising you get with every sports event on TV. The stats from 5 years ago show that 70% of Australians gamble. And 5 years ago, we lost $19 billion as a nation on gambling. Per head, we lost the most amount of money compared to any country in the world. That's that graph right there. $1,279 per person. That includes someone like Maddie DePloy. She's counted in those numbers, right? So some people are losing out big time. And that's to say nothing about the people who, you know, were more responsible. They set their money aside in investments and things to set their life up for the future, and then lost it all in the global financial crisis. And there are plenty of people whose hope for a relaxed retirement, those dreams got dashed. Now, maybe you put something else in the blank. If only I had my family. If I just have my family, then life will be complete. So I can be happy. But you know what? Who knows what will happen to those who are closest to us? There's no guarantees. Parents pass away. Spouses can let us down or betray us. Children that we've poured love into can turn and wander away into the darkest of places. If we attach our hope to our family or any other relationships, we're on dangerous ground. Or maybe you filled that blanket with something more personal. That's something that's just about you that you can control. If only I have my health, then everything will be okay. I mean, that's what they say, isn't it? If I've got my health, everything's fine. But again, who knows what will happen? I mean, at one level, it makes sense. If you're healthy, if you're fit, if you're able, then you can chart your way through life. You don't have to rely on other people to make choices for you. You can move through this world freely. But again, who knows what will happen? I remember at the last church I was at, this story that rocked our church and in fact the whole community in which we lived in, because we were near a university and an 18-year-old guy was crossing the road from the university to go to the pub, the ranch there. He didn't get hit by a car, which is how you might think that story would finish. He just dropped dead in the middle of the road. 18-year-old fit, healthy guy dropped dead, had some kind of massive brain embolism, and that was it. And everybody was like, really? How could that happen? What if there was something more certain to place our hope in? What if there was some more solid ground to put our feet on in order to navigate this world? This morning, I want to show you that Jesus offers us real hope. And at the end of the talk, I want to give you a chance to respond to what I'm saying with that card that Karen mentioned then. So have it handy, find the pen. I'm going to come back to that at the end. Now, as I say that, automatically, there may be some people here this morning who are saying, really? You reckon that some guy who's talked about in a dusty old book who lived 2,000 years ago has got anything to do with my life now and the sorts of things I'm facing? Really? You reckon someone like that is worth putting hope in? I mean, even if he was a decent kind of bloke, you know, said nice things, influenced some people for good, can you really kind of bank your whole life on someone like that? And if you're thinking that, good. They're excellent questions. They're very sane, sensible questions. And I hope to engage them as we look at this part of John's biography of Jesus together this morning. You see, if you think about it, if someone else is going to offer us genuine hope, they need to be able to offer us three things. They need to be able to offer us a better future. They need to show they have the power to deliver that future, and they have to show that they're willing to deliver that future to us. A better future, power to deliver it, and a willingness to deliver it. And all three of those we find here in John 5. So let's take them one at a time. Firstly, Jesus offers us a better future. And we pick up the story of Jesus here in John chapter 5. By this time in the story of his life, Jesus has turned water into wine at that wedding in Cana, a big famous event in his life. Last week we saw how Jesus healed an official's son at a distance. And now he's heading up to the capital city of Jerusalem. It's the political center, it's the religious center of the nation, and things are about to get more intense. So we pick it up at John chapter 5, verse 1. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem near the sheep gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethsaida, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Now it's worth just pausing there for a moment to note that, you know, some people say the Bible, you can't really believe in the Bible. It's an old book and it's full of myths and kind of legends. It's full of stuff that people made up just to get you to believe in something. And that view of the Bible was pretty prominent, certainly in academic circles, up until sometime in the 20th century. And this story kind of fitted into that theory about the Bible. You can't really believe in the Bible because, look, it talks here about some pool in Jerusalem with five covered colonnades, and in all the digging we've done, we've never found anything like that. And so, look, John must be making this up. And then lo and behold, archaeologists about mid-20th century discover in Jerusalem an unusual pool with five covered colonnades in the northwest section of the city of Jerusalem. And so all of a sudden there's this historical underpinning to what John is writing. In fact, that's why he included that detail, so it could be verified. It just took us an amount of time to be able to do it. So we have a pool. And what do we find there? Verse 3 here. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie. The blind, the lame, the paralyzed. Now we might wonder what all of these people are doing lying near a pool. And it seems that there was a belief about this pool that was so commonly known in John the Gospel writer's day that he figured he didn't have to mention what it was because everybody who would read it in his day would just know what it was. So later on, when people were hand copying John's gospel to circulate it, they thought, you know what, readers aren't going to know what John was talking about here. So they added some notes in the margin so that people would understand, and they ended up getting included in John's gospel. But the note tells us what was going on, what was believed about the pool. A great number of disabled people used to lie, and they waited for the moving of the waters. From time to time, it was believed an angel would come down and stir up the waters. And the first one into the pool after each such disturbance would be cured of whatever disease they had. So here we have a pool of hope. All of these people had no one else who could help them. All of these people had no one else they could cling on to for a better future. And so they were banking on a maybe. Maybe one day that I'm lying here, the pool will stir up with its healing powers. And maybe on that day, I can be the first one to get into the waters. And maybe somehow that water might have some kind of healing effect on me and I will have a better future. That's a big hope tied to an even bigger maybe. Now, I get what it's like, what it must have been like for some of these people. We have a son with multiple disabilities, and you want to explore any possibility of a way that you can make their life better. Any miracle cure that gets talked about, any new kind of therapy or treatment that might be able to help them. You want to explore that kind of stuff. But we soon learn that this maybe hasn't been delivering on any of the hope that it's held out. Verse 5, one who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he'd been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, I have no one to help me to get into the pool when the water's stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." 38 years, this man has been affected in his movement in some way. We don't know why, whether it was an accident, whether he was born like that. But I bet he would have spent many, many days lying by that pool, putting his hope in a maybe. And I think that's not that different to what many of us do with our lives. Many of us put our hope in a maybe, somehow, someday. Maybe, somehow, someday, I will win the lotto and everything will be sweet. All those people who are in the queues at the newsagents buying scratchies every time I go to buy the paper. Maybe, somehow, someday, I'll retire and I'll do everything I ever wanted and then I'll find true satisfaction in my life. That restlessness that I've felt in all my life about who I am and where I should be and what I could see, that'll be finally cured when I go and see all those places and do all those things. Maybe, somehow, someday, when I'm facing the end of this life, then everything will somehow just work itself out and I'll come through all right with God or heaven or whatever it is that's there. Jesus offers a better future. Do you want to get well? He says to the man. The word there literally means, do you want to be made whole? And there are so many ways that we can be less than whole. We can be less than whole physically, but we can be less than whole emotionally. We can be less than whole relationally, mentally, spiritually. Do you want to get well? Do you want to be whole? Jesus says to us, there is a future that I am bringing in now where people are made whole. You see this wonderful picture of it in the final book of the Bible in Revelation 21. We learn that there in heaven in this future, God will wipe every tear from their eyes and there will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. For the old order of things has passed away. No more broken relationships, no more broken bodies, no more broken world, no more death. Everything made whole again. Do you want to be whole? That's what Jesus offers. Jesus offers genuine hope because he offers us a better future. But secondly, he shows us he has the power to deliver that future. Now, our lives are filled with stories of a better future right now, aren't they? Every night, if you catch the news and you see what's happening on the campaign trails, everyone's going to make it better. A better Australia, more equipped to engage with the 21st century, more jobs, more money in your pocket, more whatever it is. If only you will vote for us. They're saying, give us the power so that we can deliver you a better future. There's no point being offered a better future unless there's a power to deliver it. Do you want to be whole? Jesus asks the man. And then the man starts explaining why that isn't possible. I can't get into the pool fast enough, Jesus. Every time it stirs, I've seen it stir. I can't get there. Someone else beats me. It's not going to happen. And Jesus says, no. Stop putting your hope in something that can't deliver. Do you want to be well? And then Jesus said to him, get up. Pick up your mat and walk. At once, the man was cured. He picked up his mat and he walked. Jesus offers the better future. Do you want to get well? And he has the power to deliver it. He speaks and that future comes into being. And there's a good reason for that. You see, after this man is healed, Jesus gets into a controversy with the religious officials there in Jerusalem. And it's a long, complex discussion that we don't have time to go into. But we've got to see one important thing that comes out of that discussion. In chapter 5, verse 19, Jesus answers these officials. He says, very truly I tell you, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can do only what he sees his Father doing. Because whatever the Father does, the Son also does. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all that he does. And yes, and he will show him even greater works than these, so that you will be amazed. Jesus says that he has the power to heal the man because he is the Son. And the Son is doing what the Father, meaning God in heaven, is doing. Jesus is saying, I have the power to deliver that better future because I am God. And that's an outrageous claim for anybody to make. In fact, it was so outrageous, that is why the religious officials started planning on how to kill him. Who is this man who claims he is equal with God, who claims he is God? If you're going to claim to be God and you want people to believe you, you'd better do something that only God can do. And Jesus said, the Father will do even more greater works than these and they will amaze you. And he's talking there about the first Easter, the greater works than healing the man. I mean, what could be greater than that? The greater works is that Jesus himself died and then came back to life to put it beyond reasonable doubt about who he is and the power that he has to deliver a better future. A future of wholeness in every way. He says in verse 21, for just as the Father raises the dead and gives them life, so even the Son gives life to whom he is pleased to give it. Can you see what Jesus is saying? Life after death, heaven, is not maybe, someday perhaps. It is in Jesus' hands to deliver. He has the power to deliver to you and me eternal life of no more pain, of no more suffering, of no more brokenness, of no more hurt, of no more death, of no more mourning. And he has the power to deliver that right now by faith and one day by sight and with every sense that we have. That will be the only reality that we know. Jesus offers genuine hope because he offers us a better future. And he has the power to deliver it. You know, those two things are not enough in themselves. But it's possible for someone to have access to a better future and the power to deliver it, but not want to give it to you. In fact, if you dig into many of the religions of this world throughout history and even today, many of the gods of those religions claim to offer whoever follows them a better future, claim to have the power to deliver it, but no one knows whether they want to or not. People who follow that, they don't know where they're going to be, whether they will be part of that future or not. They don't know whether that God is willing to give it to them. But not so Jesus. Jesus offers us genuine hope because he shows us, thirdly, he is willing to deliver that future. A question that came to me when I read this account at the pool for the first time some years ago, or maybe it occurred to you as you heard it just then. You know, if Jesus has that power, why didn't he just heal everybody at the pool? I mean, you've done one, how hard is it to do two? And if you've done two, you could probably do four, and if you're doing four, you may as well do 10, and then why not do them all, right? And maybe he did. Maybe he did. Certainly, he did way more miracles than what this Gospel of John tells us, or any of the Gospels. John tells us that at the end of his book, he said Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. So maybe he did heal the rest of them. We just don't know. We're not told. So why are we told about the healing of this man? Well, John tells us why. He included the healing of this man in his account. Again, at the end of his book, he says, these signs are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. This healing was meant to be a sign. We all know how signs work. They're part of our everyday life. For the last few years in the September holidays, our family has driven up to the Gold Coast and had a couple of weeks on the beach there. And for the last couple of years, because we've done it a few times before, the boys get really, really excited when we come to the sign that says, "You are now entering Queensland." You know that one at the border? And they're excited, not because the sign is impressive. It's a pretty crusty, grungy, beaten up old piece of metal, you know, with some green paint and some white words slapped on it. It's really not very impressive at all. Like so many things from Queensland, right? So they're not excited about seeing the sign. They're excited because they know what that sign points to. They know when they see that sign, it's less than an hour before we're at our holiday destination where it's sun and sand and good times. This healing is meant to be a sign of something bigger and better to come, and how Jesus is willing and able to offer it to us. After the man is healed, he tries to point Jesus out to the officials, but Jesus has gone into the crowd. But then later we get a pointer to this bigger picture that this sign is pointing us to. Verse 14, later Jesus found this man at the temple and said to him, "See, you're well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you." This is a clue to the bigger picture that the sign is pointing to. You see, it's sin. It is our active rebellion against the God who made us that leads us to be less than whole. In a world that's broken by sin, we experience bodies that wear out or don't work the way they're supposed to. Our own selfishness or the selfishness of others can lead to absolute misery in relationships. Our own pride, our own desire to build a name for ourselves, to build our own brand, can shut us out from the God who made us. Why would I need him? I can do it on my own. Thank you very much. And all of this shuts us out of that better future that Jesus offers. But see, Jesus is not only able to offer that future to us, he's willing to offer it by doing whatever it takes to deal with that sin. Later in John's gospel, in fact, the last third of his book is about Jesus going to the cross to pay for every sin that you and I have committed, to pay for our rebellion against God, to pay the penalty for it. And then in his resurrection to life, to clear our slate with God and make it possible for us to enter that future. That is the reason that Jesus, the God-man, came to earth. These healings are signs pointing to that bigger reality and what he wants to offer it to us and how he's willing to offer it to us. And that's why he's able to say at the end of our chapter in verse 24, he says, "Very truly I tell you, whoever hears my word and believes him who sent me has eternal life and will not be judged, but has crossed over from death to life. Very truly, I tell you, a time is coming and has now come when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live." He is willing to give that future to us if we will hear him and believe and put our trust in him. This morning, where is your hope? Where does it lie? Is it in a maybe? Someday, somehow, perhaps? Is it like the pool? It doesn't have to be. There's a chance to have certain hope, solid ground to put your feet on, to navigate this life and to know what is coming after. And so, if you've never grabbed hold of that hope before, I want to give you a chance to do that right now. And it's not hard to do. All it takes is a prayer to God saying, I want to put my life in your hands. I understand what Jesus has done for me. I understand the future he's willing to offer me, is able to offer me. And I want to grab it. And you can do that by praying a prayer like the one I'm going to pray in just a moment. Let me read it out to you. This is what it says. It's there on the screen. Dear God, thanks for sending Jesus to pay for my sin and offer me genuine hope of a better future. I'm sorry for putting my hope in things that can't deliver. Please forgive me because of what Jesus did for me. Please help me to live trusting in Jesus from this day forward. If you want to grab hold of that hope and you've never done it before, or you've wandered away and you want to come back and know that your feet are on solid ground, I want to give you a chance to pray that with me right now. So this is what we're going to do. I'm going to ask everybody, if you would mind bowing your heads and closing your eyes, even if you don't want to pray, that's fine. The person next to you might want to, and you can help them out by doing that. I'm going to pray this prayer line by line. And if you want to make it yours, you can echo that in your mind and God will hear you. So can we do that now? Can we all bow our heads and close our eyes? And I'm going to pray this line by line. Dear God, thanks for sending Jesus to pay for my sin, to offer me genuine hope of a better future. I'm sorry for putting my hope in things that can't deliver. Please forgive me because of what Jesus did for me. Please help me to live trusting in Jesus from this day forward. Amen. Now, friends, if you prayed that prayer for the very first time now, can I say, I'll tell you what's happened. In Jesus' words from John 5, you've crossed over from death to life. Those who hear my voice and believe in me have life even now. And that is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And we praise God if that's happened. And we want to get some help to you if you've done that. So I want to spend just one more minute of your time. Everybody can grab that card that we talked about earlier. Everybody grab it out, even if you were here last week and filled one in. That's okay. Everybody grab that card. If we're all filling it in, then no one feels weird for filling it in. And there's a box that you can tick with full integrity here on this card. Okay, grab that card, grab a pen. While I'm talking, just write a name and some contact details. And if you prayed that prayer for the first time, then we'd love to help you. There's a tick the middle box saying, I'd like to start a relationship with Jesus. If you prayed it, you just did. And that's great, and we'd love to help you. If you feel like you've been away from God and you want to restart that relationship, you want to come back and you've done that by praying that prayer, then let's tick that box, the second one, I'd like to restart a relationship. And again, we'd love to help you with that. If you already prayed a prayer like that some years ago, then wonderful. You know, you've tasted the kind of hope I've been talking about this morning. Let us know that. I already have a relationship with Jesus. We never get tired or sick of seeing that. So tick that. That'd be great. If you heard everything I said this morning and you heard say this is a time to pray a prayer, but you're like, I'm not ready to do something like that yet. You know, I would still have a bunch of questions that I need answered before I could take a step like that. That's fantastic. There are answers to your questions. We'd love to help you with that. There's a number of different ways we can do that. One of them is a Christianity Explained course that's starting in 2 weeks. It's a relaxed, comfortable chance for you to ask lots of questions. You don't get put on the spot. It's a 4-week course. The details are on the back of the card. But tick that box saying, I still have questions, and we'll plug you into that and make sure you know when and where that's happening. Lastly, if you're here this morning because under some kind of sufferance, your partner dragged you here or you took a wrong turn, you thought you were turning at the lights and you accidentally turned into church and you're too embarrassed to leave, and you've just been sitting here and you've heard everything I've said, and you know what? No way. You can tick that box. We have a box for you. And that's fine. Let us know that. Now, thanks for not walking out halfway through. I really appreciate that. In fact, I know of a lady who came up to a minister and said, look, in a really embarrassed way, she said, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry that my husband got up and walked out halfway through your sermon. I hope it didn't disturb you too much. And the minister said, well, you know, it did kind of put me off. She says, well, don't be offended. He's been sleepwalking since he was little. So thanks for not leaving. Whether you're asleep or not, you stayed here. That was fantastic. So fill that in. And in a moment, where our offertory bags that we do every week will come around, you can put those cards into those. Now, this kind of hope that I've been talking about that Jesus offers impacts any life, lots of lives, lots of different lives in lots of different ways. It grabs hold of people and transforms them. And I want you now to listen to how it transformed Sam's life. Let's have a look at the screen.